The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon, Keen Features Syndicate. Should you skip potatoes before surgery? Question. When I had surgery, the head of anesthesiologist came by and talked with me beforehand, and I mentioned an article I had read. It advised avoiding potatoes, tomatoes, and eggplant several days before surgery. These foods cause problems clearing the effects of anesthesia. She responded that in 22 years in the field, she'd never heard that. After my surgery, the anesthesiologist came back to see me and was impressed with my recovery. That inspired her to search the article I'd mentioned, and she found a study from the University of Chicago around 1998. The surgeon also was impressed by how well I was doing after anesthesia. Others might appreciate knowing this, since it can be difficult to clear anesthesia from our systems. Answer. We, too, were unaware of the impact of solanaceous vegetables such as potatoes, eggplant, and tomatoes. These foods impact an enzyme called acetylcholinesterase, which is important in clearing muscle relaxants, similar to Curare, and that's cited in the journal Anesthesiology, August 2000. Such medications are often used during surgery. We found only a few research articles related to this topic, so it is not surprising that your anesthesiologist was unaware of this potential reaction. Question. I have been on ranitidine to control acid reflux for 4 years. Ranitidine has been in the news, but I cannot find out if my medicine has been recalled. It is made by Strides Pharma. My pharmacist has been no help. Do you have any info? Answer. Strides Pharma Science Limited, based in Bangalore, India, stopped U.S. sales of ranitidine in late September. Your pharmacist should have been able to check on this for you. We consulted David Light, head of Valisure, the Connecticut pharmacy that discovered the carcinogen NDMA in ranitidine or Zantac. He told us, quote, many, if not most, ranitidine products have now been recalled. It is the view of Valisure that the chemical, biological, and clinical data strongly suggests that all ranitidine products are easily susceptible to forming the carcinogen NDMA. Valisure tested other medications in the same drug class, H2 blockers that do not have the same inherent ability to form NDMA. These include famotidine or Pepcid and cimetidine or Tagamet. It is important to note that another H2 blocker, nizatidine, also formed NDMA in Valisure's chemical tests. You should talk with your primary care provider about an alternative to ranitidine. Could pomegranate Crestor interact? Question. I took Crestor for 3 years. All was well until I started taking my daily meds with pomegranate juice. Then I developed cramps and muscle pain. It was awful until I discovered that pomegranate acts like grapefruit with a statin. I stopped the Crestor and slowly my aches reduced. Answer, rosuvastatin or Crestor is a statin-type cholesterol-lowering medication. Other statins, such as atorvastatin and simvastatin, which are Lipitor and Zocor, are metabolized by the CYP34A4 enzyme. Grapefruit juice inhibits this enzyme and can raise blood levels of these drugs, cited in the American Journal of Cardiovascular Drugs, Volume 4, Number 5, 2004. However, it should have no effect on the blood level of rosuvastatin. Rosuvastatin is metabolized by a different intestinal enzyme, the CYP2C9. Although pomegranate juice inhibits 2C9 activity in the laboratory, it doesn't seem to have much effect on blood levels of the drugs that have been studied, cited in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, April 2014, and the European Journal of Drug Metabolism and Pharmacokinetics, June 2017. Consequently, it isn't clear that pomegranate juice was the factor that triggered your symptoms. We discuss statin drugs and other ways to lower blood lipids in our guide to cholesterol control and heart health. Question. I began an iodine regimen this week. It requires that I supplement with my selenium to offset my any autoimmune reactions from the iodine. Consequently, I've been taking 200 micrograms of selenium in the evening before bedtime. Since beginning this regimen, I've awakened every night with horrific leg cramps. These are very unusual for me. I initially attributed the leg cramps to electrolyte imbalance, but I truly think it's the selenium specifically. I have been careful to keep my sodium, magnesium, and potassium in good order and should not be experiencing this. Does selenium cause muscle cramps? Answer. We could not find any studies on this question in the medical literature. What we did find was research indicating that a selenium compound, sodium selenite, can disrupt neuromuscular function in various animals. That's cited in the European Journal of Pharmacology, August 11, 1989, and Neuropharmacology, May 1990, and Neurotoxicology, October 2012. Other readers have reported similar reactions. Can lisinopril cause lung cancer? Question. My mother took lisinopril for years to control her blood pressure. She regularly went to her physician complaining of a chronic cough, but he kept telling her it was allergies and prescribed Zyrtec. After a year of this, her doctor decided she must have GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, and sent her to a gastroenterologist. The specialist found nothing. Not once did anyone prescribe a chest x-ray. When she started losing weight and feeling extremely fatigued, I insisted on a chest x-ray. They found advanced lung cancer, and she died 6 months later. Is there a link between lisinopril and lung cancer? Answer. Lisinopril is one of the most frequently prescribed medications in the United States. It belongs to a class of blood pressure medications called ACE, angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Over 20 million Americans take this drug because it is so very effective. For the most part, lisinopril is considered safe. It can cause a chronic cough, however. That is something your mother's doctor should have considered. Only a few studies have addressed your question. In 2012, Canadian researchers reviewed medical records of more than a million people, and that's the study PLOS, P-L-O-S-1, December 12, 2012. They found that long-term use of ACE inhibitors was linked to a modestly increased risk of lung cancer. A more recent study also found a slightly higher rate of lung cancer among patients who had taken an ACE inhibitor for at least 5 years. That's in the BMJ, or British Medical Journal, October 24, 2018. People who took lisinopril or a similar medicine for 10 years had a higher risk. It's virtually impossible to determine whether any given case of cancer is a result of exposure to a medication. Readers can learn more about other alternatives for controlling hypertension in our guide to blood pressure treatment. It is available in the Health eGuide section of www.peoplespharmacy.com. What about taking Beano to counter the effect of gassing when you eat beans or other vegetables? Does it work? Beano contains the food enzyme alpha-galactosidase. It helps break down the complex sugars called oligosaccharides before bacteria can digest them and produce gas. One placebo-controlled trial in children confirmed that this product can be helpful against flatulence, cited in BMC Gastroenterology, September 24, 2013. From the Costco Connection, care more, stress less. Achieving your best results for you and your loved ones by Roberta Carson. Caregiving for a loved one can be stressful and overwhelming. It can involve long hours, numerous doctor's appointments, complicated medication regimens, helping with basic daily living activities, and countless other tasks. And millions of Americans happily take on this important role. These tips and resources can help you do the best job of caring for your loved ones. First, identifying stressors. In a 2015 AARP study, caregivers reported several challenges, including facing complex care situations, emotional stress, and financial strain. Communication was an issue, with caregivers expressing the need for more information on related topics, including how to keep their loved ones safe and how to manage their own stress. Next, help with costs. If your finances are strained due to caregiving responsibilities, help is available. Some organizations help patients with medical and care-related expenses. Eligibility, benefits, coverage, and rules vary. So research your options. Here are just a few. NeedyMeds.org, information and links to organizations that provide financial help with medications and other medical expenses. BenefitsCheckup.org, created by the National Council on Aging. This tool helps people 55 and older find funding resources. And then patientresource.com, a comprehensive list of organizations that help with a variety of expenses for cancer patients, although some of the listed organizations help those with other illnesses. Reducing stress. Get as much help as possible, paid and unpaid. Don't try to do this by yourself. Ask your community for help with non-caregiving tasks such as meal preparation, errands, and child care. Don't worry, they want to help. Don't isolate yourself. Reach out to friends and family. Chat on the phone. Ask for visitors. Ask your church, temple, or local community center if they have a program for visiting the ill. Join a support group, in person or online, to connect with other caregivers in the same situation. It can be comforting, and you may even learn some tips for patient care and stress reduction. Don't neglect to take care of your own physical needs. Get regular sleep and exercise and maintain a healthy diet. Make yourself a priority for a small part of each day. Whatever activity you love to do, do it. Take a bath, meditate, watch TV, read, listen to music, etc. And try to occasionally get out of the house for something fun. Lastly, try to laugh every day. And don't be afraid of a good cry. Both can relieve stress. Improving care. Here are some steps to improve care. Take detailed notes at all appointments. Bring your notes, test results, and medication lists to all appointments. Don't assume your doctors have access to or have read reports from other doctors. Ask as many questions as you need to until you understand the information. Before a hospital discharge, make sure you understand all instructions and practice any new nursing tasks. Breathe easier. By Nissa Simon. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease may leave you short of breath, but there is hope and help. Symptoms may start with shortness of breath, or it might be a chronic cough. Worst case scenario is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. COPD is an umbrella term for a condition that includes chronic bronchitis and emphysema. The first symptoms of COPD may be shortness of breath when climbing stairs or walking up a hill. Often people blame it on getting older, notes Dr. Ravi Kalhan, that's spelled K-A-L-H-A-N, director of the asthma and COPD programs at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago. Or they feel sure they have bronchitis and depend on an antibiotic to quell the cough. Smokers tend to ignore a bothersome cough and assume that once they quit, they'll breathe more easily. Wrong on all counts, notes Dr. Kalhan. These symptoms often represent a more serious underlying disease. According to the American Lung Association, 14 million Americans have been diagnosed with COPD, but millions more may have the disease without knowing it. A 2017 study in the New England Journal of Medicine pointed out the importance of early diagnosis and treatments. Researchers found that over time, those with the mildest form of COPD who were treated fared better overall than those who were not. How is COPD diagnosed? A painless breathing test called a spirometry is the most widely used method. Patients blow forcefully into a tube connected to a small device that records how much air you inhale and how much you exhale and how quickly you exhale. With COPD, the airways in the lungs become inflamed and thickened, and as a result, the body's tissues receive less oxygen, and it becomes more difficult to get rid of waste carbon dioxide. Consequently, air gets trapped in the lungs, and you can't breathe in deeply or exhale efficiently, says Dr. Frank C. Skirba, director of the Emphysema COPD Research Center at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Who gets it? COPD used to be considered a disease of middle-aged men, But each year since 2000, the disease has claimed the lives of more women than men. It is the third leading cause of death in this country, surpassed only by heart disease and cancer. There's no cure, and doctors can't restore or regenerate damaged lungs, but new treatments have reduced symptoms and improved quality of life substantially, comments Dr. Calhoun. How is it treated? Inhaled medications called bronchodilators that open the windpipe to allow air to move in and out of the lungs more efficiently have become the mainstay of COPD therapy. In the old days, we had short-acting drugs called puffers, but the new combinations can be used just once or twice a day, and you can now get combinations of all your drugs in one inhaler. They improve breathing, decrease shortness of breath, and boost exercise tolerance. There's also evidence that combination inhalers reduce exacerbations or flare-ups. Flare-ups are significant for people with COPD, says Dr. Calhoun. Quality of life goes down, lung function goes down, and it takes a while before they return to where they were. So knowing how to prevent them is important, he continues. Until now, patients with emphysema could have a somewhat risky surgical procedure called lung reduction that involves cutting out dead space in the lungs. Now there is a new treatment for people with severe COPD who are already on bronchodilator therapy. Just last year, the Food and Drug Administration approved a non-surgical technique, endobronchial valve therapy, where one-way valves are placed in an airway to control airflow so that non-functioning areas of the lungs are collapsed, allowing better quality lung tissue to expand in the chest. These valves permit patients to inhale more completely, breathe better, and improve their ability to exercise. It mimics the effects of surgery without having to cut the lung, explains Dr. Skirba. Living with COPD. It is possible to live with COPD. Here are some tips to make it easier. Smoking is the number one cause of COPD, so quit now. There are a number of ways to kick the habit, including stop smoking groups, over-the-counter skin patches, chewing gum, and prescription drugs. The National Cancer Institute also provides help. Call 1-877-448-7848 or check out their website at smokefree.gov. Watch your weight. Being overweight makes it harder to breathe and limits activity. Being underweight weakens muscles and leaves you prone to infections. Ask your doctor to put you in touch with a registered dietitian who can help you create a suitable eating plan. Slip on your sneakers. If you feel short of breath, you'll tend to move less and become out of shape, which causes even more breathlessness. The answer? Enroll in a pulmonary rehab program. You'll increase your physical activity and learn to manage your breathing, which often improves symptoms. Finally, roll up your sleeves. It is critical to have an annual flu shot because COPD makes you more susceptible to serious complications from the flu. Also, ask about a pneumonia shot if you have emphysema. And don't give up. Until recently, COPD was considered a death sentence. Doctors wouldn't look at patients in the eye when they made the diagnosis, and their patients would sink into despair upon hearing it. But medical advances have redefined COPD. It's now considered a chronic disease. Along with diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, and high blood pressure. They cannot be cured, but they can be treated successfully. Innovative combinations of medications and non-surgical techniques that relieve shortness of breath and new ways to increase exercise capacity now make it possible to live with COPD and move on. Ask your doctor at your next office visit and find out which ones will make life easier for you. Ask the Doctor by Dr. Anthony Komaroff, M.D. The question is, what is ALS? A friend says the worst disease of all is ALS. What is it? What makes a disease the worst, quote unquote? For many, it would be a disease that robs them of their mind. For others, it would be a disease that creates constant pain. For still others, it would be a disease that makes them unable to care for themselves or to control their bodily functions in full view of their family and closest friends. amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, can cause all that. Fortunately, it's quite rare. It is a disease of the motor neurons, the nerve cells through which the brain sends signals to the muscles, causing them to move parts of the body. The most common initial symptom of ALS is slowly progressive weakness, usually of one arm or leg, a weakness that subsequently spreads to other parts of the body. Muscles lose their bulk, become stiff, develop painful spasms, and start twitching. Movements become very slow and poorly coordinated. In some people with ALS, weakness also can spread to the muscles of the face and throat. Speech becomes slurred, it's hard to swallow, and the voice becomes hoarse. Spasms cause the muscles of the mouth to clench or the vocal cords to snap closed, briefly shutting off breathing. Weakness of the breathing muscles, the muscles between the ribs and the muscles called the diaphragm, can make it necessary for people with ALS to be hooked up to a breathing machine. Ultimately, most people with ALS die from their inability to breathe. Average life expectancy from the time of diagnosis is 3 to 5 years, although some people live longer. Two medicines can slow but not stop the progression of the disease. As for pain, it can come from muscle spasms or from bed sores due to a person with ALS being bedridden. Compared with other terminal illnesses, in ALS, pain is less of a problem. Although I was taught in medical school that the thinking neurons are spared, we now know that it's not always true. Although their memory is preserved, people with ALS can have trouble thinking clearly and using language. They can become apathetic, lose empathy for others, say inappropriate things, and laugh or cry inappropriately, but they remain well aware of what is happening to them. I once visited a friend whose husband was dying of ALS. He lay on the living room couch, motionless and speechless, but his eyes could move. He stared at me, his eyes asking, "Can't you do something?" I could do nothing. Worst or not, ALS is a terrible disease. We have to find a cure. Fortunately, new tools are available to research teams today, giving me hope. Can exercise and diet help mild cognitive impairment? We often tell you about using aerobic exercise and a healthy diet to try to stave off dementia. But will those approaches help if you already have the slight but noticeable change in memory and thinking known as mild cognitive impairment, or MCI? A small randomized trial, the gold standard type of study, published online December 19, 2018 by Neurology, suggests the combination of diet and exercise may indeed help. Researchers studied 160 sedentary older adults who had MCI as well as one or more cardiovascular disease risk factors, such as high cholesterol. Participants were randomly assigned to do aerobic exercise, to follow a heart-healthy diet, the dietary approaches to stop hypertension, or the DASH diet, to do a combination of aerobic exercise and the DASH diet, or to just get weekly heart health education. After 6 months, people who just exercised several times a week got a little bump in executive function, thinking skills that help us plan and organize. But the biggest change was seen in people who both followed the DASH diet and did aerobic training 3 times a week. Their improved planning skills were equivalent to reversing nearly 10 years of brain aging compared with study participants who didn't exercise or improve their diets. The findings demonstrate that it's never too late to start exercising and eating right. Fiber linked to lower risk for chronic disease and early death. Are you eating enough fiber each day? The recommended dietary fiber intake in the United States is 25 grams per day for women, which is about three half cup servings of legumes, and 38 grams per day for men. But most people eat only half that. Now, a study commissioned by the World Health Organization, published online January 10, 2019 by The Lancet, offers more evidence about why fiber is an important player in good health. Researchers combed through more than 240 studies and clinical trials and found that people who ate the most fiber-rich foods had the lowest risks for dying or developing chronic disease during the studies compared with people who ate the least amount of fiber-rich foods. How much do the risks fall? For every 8-gram increase in dietary fiber eaten each day, the total number of deaths and cases of heart disease, diabetes, and colorectal cancer decreased by 5% to 27%. The authors say that eating 25 to 29 grams of fiber per day is adequate, but eating more than 30 grams per day might offer even more protection. A risky combination, healthy weight but unhealthy activity level. Many people think the only reason for regular exercise is that it helps you maintain a healthy weight. Not true. A sedentary lifestyle can cancel the potential heart benefits of weight control, according to a study published online December 4, 2018, by the American Journal of Cardiology. Researchers looked at 5 years' worth of health survey responses and weight calculations from thousands of overweight, normal weight people ages 40 to 79 who'd never had heart disease. Scientists noted the participants' amount of abdominal fat, waist size, and self-reported amounts of physical activity, then calculated everyone's cardiovascular disease risk. The results: 30% of sedentary people with normal weight had about the same risk for heart attack or stroke as people who were overweight. Sedentary adults whose weight was normal also had higher levels of belly fat, shortness of breath upon exertion, and an unhealthy waist circumference compared with normal weight adults who exercise regularly. However, people with a normal weight who exercised at least 150 minutes per week were 58% less likely to have heart attack than those in the study who were overweight. The hidden dangers of dietary supplements. As reported recently, dietary supplements marketed for sexual function, which are supposed to be free of conventional drugs, may contain hidden pharmaceutical ingredients. A study published online October 12, 2018 by JAMA Network Open analyzed almost 800 supplements. Most were sexual enhancement, weight loss, or muscle building. About 80% of the supplements contain one pharmaceutical ingredient, 20% contain more than one, and some 33 products contain three or more pharmaceutical ingredients. The most common hidden pharmaceuticals: erectile dysfunction drugs, weight loss medications, antidepressants, antibiotic steroids, and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Some of the hidden drugs have never been approved by the FDA. Others have been removed from the market. And all, say the authors, have the potential to cause severe harm from accidental misuse, overuse, or interaction with other medications, underlying health conditions, or other drugs within the same dietary supplement. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.